Okay, so continuing with the threshold thing algorithms that I was explaining, the processing of the histogram sometimes require that we actually modify it in some way to reduce or eliminate the possibility of error. And one of the algorithms that does that is called Gaussian search. This algorithm works in several steps, and the first one is always to smooth, to pre-process the histogram, to smooth the values in some way, so that you can eliminate peaks that are local and noise in some way. So basically, if you process a histogram like this one, there might be noise. There's local maxima, like for example here. Whoops. Here, that will make the thresholding algorithm make an error. So, to reduce that, the possibility of that happening, we smooth the histogram in a very simple way. This smoothing is basically computing the mean of the histogram in a small window, which is usually of odd. Odd values, 3 or 5, small window, and you compute the mean of the histogram in that window, and that's the value that you're going to use in processing the histogram. This allows basically to reduce the noise and some local peaks, and you can simply make the processing more robust. Okay, that's a simple step in this algorithm, but you can also do it for other algorithms. And so the second one would be, let's see if I, yes, I just compute the mean, and then the second thing I do is, starting from the leftmost maximum, which in this place it would be this one, this is the leftmost maximum, I traverse this histogram trying to find a positive slope. So if I'm going from the leftmost maximal to the rightmost maximal, I will start with a descent with a negative slope, and then slowly take a positive slope into the other maximum. How do I compute the slopes? In a very simple way. This is slope, and this is window of size S. Of size n. So the slope is approximated by the difference between this element in the histogram and element 0. And in that way I can know if the slope is positive or negative, approximately. So starting at the leftmost maximum, I traverse the histogram, computing the slope until I get a positive slope larger than some threshold p. So it's important to see that for this algorithm you need to define also a threshold for the slope. You're looking for a threshold in the histogram, and in order to get that, you need also a threshold to define a threshold for the slope. The final step of Gaussian search is simply, when the slope becomes higher than the threshold, then the final one is the mean position in the window at that instant. Okay? So you just compute the mean in this window that you're processing, and that is going to be your threshold T. It's going to be usually closer to the second slope than to the first one, because you're already expecting the positive slope. The problem with the zero slope is that it can take a long time, so you really need to realize that you're going up again, and that's why it tends to be closer in the limit. In this example, it's going to be really close to the second slope. So that is how Gaussian search would work. This is another one. It's called background symmetry. It basically can be used when there's a unimodal distribution. So you don't have two basic slopes, but more generally only one, which is normally the background. So assume that this is your histogram. The objects are dark and the background is lighter. First thing you do again, smooth the histogram, then compute the maximum, which would be this point. And then this is what we're going to do. Instead of trying to go the other way and try to find the peak for the object, if there is no such thing as a clear peak for the object, this is what we're going to do. We're going to try to estimate what part of the histogram corresponds to most of the background, for example, 95%, okay, which is the usual percentage that we use. So how do we do that? If this is the peak, then I can assume that I will have half the pixels of the background in this direction and the other one, the other half in this direction. So what I do is count in the histogram on that direction as many pixels as may constitute half of 95%. Okay? When I obtain that value, which it may be at this point, then this is what I do. I assume that the distribution is symmetric because I'm assuming it's Gaussian. So at the other side, which is here, this will be actually 97.5% of all the background. It's 95 plus 2.5 on that side. So this is most of the histogram, most of the background actually, and then I will use this number as a threshold. You see, the difference is that I'm not considering objects at all. I just ignored everything that had to do with the object. And the reason is, in my application, I don't have a clear peak in objects as I do have for the background. If the peak is very clear for objects and the background is not so clear, then you can also do something similar. Okay, get the idea? This is a variation of background symmetry. It's basically, it's more or less the same thing, but it's better justified from the theoretical point of view. So this has to do with the properties of the Gaussian distribution. You know that if a variable is Gaussian, then it's completely specified by a mean mu and a variance sigma squared. So the mean is the peak of the distribution right here. And do you know what sigma is? If Gaussian is characterized by mu and sigma squared, what does sigma mean? So mu is the mean and sigma, the standard deviation. Okay. Do you know geometric interpretation for the standard deviation? It's exactly this point in the curve, and I'm not sure how this is how this term is said in English. In Spanish, it's punto de inflexión. Let's suppose that in English it's point of inflection in the curve, but I'm not sure. Okay, the standard deviation is particular because it's the point where the curve changes sign. Okay, but it's not only geometrically significant, but it's significant in many other ways. For example, if you have some variable that has this distribution, if you measure it at some point, what is the probability that the measured value will be less than sigma from the mean of the curve? What is the probability that the measured value will be between mu minus sigma and mu plus sigma? Anyone knows? It's around 6.5. 0.65. So 65% of Gaussian distribution of the area under the Gaussian distribution is in this interval, minus sigma, 2 plus sigma around mu. And again, if I measure a variable that has a Gaussian distribution, the probability that it will be less distance than twice sigma is 95. which is what I say here. The probability that the absolute value of the variable is less than 2 sigma with respect to the mean is around 95%. It's not exactly 2. Actually, it's 1.96. But that's why we say it's around 95. So this means that you can think of this in several ways. If you measure several times a Gaussian distribution, 95% of those measures, if they are enough, will be within this interval. 68% will be within the interval minus sigma plus sigma. 95% will be minus 2 sigma plus 2 sigma. 99% will be minus 3 sigma plus 3 sigma. And this is a way to characterize the Gaussian distribution. So what does this algorithm, this variation of the background symmetry does? Instead of just saying I want a certain percentage of the gray levels in the background below that curve, you compute actually the standard deviation of that histogram which approximates the Gaussian. You compute the standard deviation and then you say, then my threshold is going to be the mean minus 2 sigma, more precisely 1.96 sigma. And this is more or less 95% of the curve again. Okay, so it's very similar, but has a more clear theoretical justification. Okay, I think there's a couple of algorithms still. Another variation for the case in which the object is not clearly known or characterized is called the triangle algorithm. And this is very simple. You again look for the highest peak, and then you compute a line with the minimum level in the image, which is 0%, which would be here, and then you compute the distance from the the line to all of the elements in the histogram, and your threshold is going to be the point that gives you the largest distance, which it's assumed to be the point where the peak, slope is heavily increasing again. That's the more or less the justification behind this algorithm. And in the case that the object is not clearly visible and the background is clear, this algorithm and Gaussian symmetry work more or less the same. So they're more or less equivalent. Why are these algorithms not applicable in many cases? Well, the usefulness depends on whether the, let's say, the conventional threshold that you compute approximates the optimal very well. How can you decide that? Well, it depends. There's very good cases where this is the leftmost figure A. If you have a distribution of background which is highly peaked, and then the distribution of object is reasonably distant from the background, then, as I said before, what you are trying to analyze is the sum of both. And but the optimal threshold, which you can never really know, is going to be close to the one that you compute by one of these algorithms. If there is less distance between the peak of the background and the peak of the object, which would be the second case, then there starts to be a larger distance between the optimal and the computed one. And even if the background is perfectly Gaussian and the foreground is perfectly Gaussian, if there is not enough contrast, in which case the two curves would be very close, then in the sum you actually don't have a clear, you yourself wouldn't have a clear idea of where to put the threshold. Maybe here? But it's not exactly clear. So if there is high contrast, the algorithms will work very well. And if there's very low contrast, even if color is uniform, these algorithms are going to have problems. So let's see other methods. This is the one that you have to program in the first lab. It's called Isodata, and it was conceived in 1978. This is a very simple algorithm that also works with the histogram, and it's an iterative process that basically does first choose a seed threshold value that I'm going to iteratively try to improve in some way. And the seed threshold value is going to be the mean of the whole histogram, which would probably be somewhere around here, because there's more dark pixels than light ones. So this is my first value. And what I do is assume that that value divides the histogram into two intervals, one's belonging to background, the other one's belonging to object. So in the next iteration, I will compute the mean of each of the intervals, not of the full histogram, but of each of the intervals. And then I compute the semi-sum as the new threshold. So M1 is the mean of region 1, okay? M2 is the mean of region 2. The next threshold is going to be the semi-sum of both. So I basically try to adjust the threshold to converge to the valley between the two slopes. And for that, I repeat this process until the value does not change. Can it happen sometimes that the value always changes and the algorithm never finishes? It really depends on the histogram. So if the histogram is really well conditioned like this will never happen, because you will actually fall in the valley between both, and eventually the threshold will not hold. But you can't guarantee that for all the histograms that that you might have to process. In cases like this, of course, it will finish with no problem. Okay, so that's one iterative method. In all of these methods, we're assuming that the illumination is reasonably uniform, but that's not in many cases true. So if it is the case, and this synthetic image would be an example, then you have this nice histogram but two Gaussian, and you already know how to deal with that. But assume that the lighting is not uniform. For example, there's only one source of light, and it's right here. So there will be more light in this area than in that area. And that would be lighting conditions like this. So if you assume that, if that's going to happen, then your image is actually going to look like this. Even if the objects and the background are uniform, the lighting conditions actually affect the result in a way that shows a non-bimodal histogram. So you can't apply these methods anymore. If you did, then this is the result that you will probably get, which is very bad if you want to clearly see the square in the image. So adaptive methods, basically, with a very simple idea, divide the image into regions, smaller, like you could say, maybe in this case you could divide 3 by 3, okay? And then apply your standard thresholding algorithm to each of the regions. Why will that work better? Because in each of the regions, the difference in lighting is going to be smaller. You will not find the same threshold for every sub-image, of course, and that's precisely the idea. But within the sub-image, the difference is going to be less, or the effect of bad lighting is illumination is going to be less. So you are going to be safer. So basically, you divide the image, compute a different threshold for each part, binarize each sub-image, and then you compose the result. Okay, it's a simple idea that works well. Another way to deal with variable illumination is actually to compute the function that might model how the scene is illuminated. And you can see that also in this synthetic example. This would be the original image. And if you plot the image as a function, then you can see that there's a slope in the background, which clearly shows that illumination is not uniform, but it's linear. Okay, it could be, it's reasonably linear if you illuminate it this way. But if you put the light bulb here, then there's going to be a lot of light here and less at the extremes, and the function of illumination is going to be a curve. Okay, so depending on the scene, the approximation could be have a different way, a different form. In this case, if I try to threshold this image, if the threshold is very low, I will get all of the objects, but also part of the background. And if the threshold is high, then I will get part of the object, although I will be able to ignore most of the background. One alternative would be to subdivide the image, and another one would be try to compute the linear function that describes the illumination and then subtract it from the original image, which is what we do in this example. So actually we transform the image to subtract the difference that might be due to this linear change in illumination. So you compute another image which has, in these photocopies it doesn't look very different, but it is actually different. The histogram is reasonably better, and in this case you can more clearly compute for the modified image a threshold that allows you to see perfectly well the object and ignore completely the background. Okay? This has the limitation that you really need to know how to model the illumination that the scene may have. So you need to know about the conditions of illumination. A couple of other methods. So all of the methods that I have explained up to here are only based on the histogram. And as I said before, that works pretty well for many applications. That's what we do frequently, but in some cases it might not be enough. So let me explain a couple of methods that use the histogram and also the original image in some way. This is a synthetic example in which what I want is to detect the objects which are very dark along with the shadows which are lighter, okay? But I want to ignore everything that is only shadow, which would be in this image, it would be the first rectangle. So this is what I finally want. I want the object plus its shadow, but not only shadow, okay? So if I look at the histogram of this image, it would look like this. There's two valleys, which basically correspond to the first glare level up to here, and the second glare, no, I'm sorry. The first one is the object, and if you threshold using that histogram, this is what you would get. If you threshold using the second one, then you would get both the object and the other shadow, which is something you don't want. If you only use the interval, then you only get the shadows. So it doesn't seem there doesn't seem to be a way to stay with the object and its surrounding background. Why not? Because the histogram has no information of the relative location of pixels. That's why I need the image anyway. So this algorithm works in this way. Originally, I will use the first threshold and only consider the object. And then this is what I do in each iteration. I analyze the whole image and try to find any pixels surrounding the object or touching the object that may be considered a shadow. And what will happen in the first round? All of the pixels around here will go in, and in the next round more of them and more of them until the full square is found, but these ones will never be in the final image because they never touch the original object. Okay, so in that way my final result, after nothing changes, I stop, and my final result will only be the object that I wanted along with its corresponding shadow, and then I could ignore the shadow or do whatever I want, or whatever the application requires. This is one example, and this is a very useful, I think it's a very interesting algorithm, which is the last one that I will explain. It's called, it has the name of a Polish scientist, which I'm not able to pronounce, unfortunately. It might be Bessa. I'm afraid I don't know. But this guy in 1973 proposed this algorithm, which is based on a very simple idea, very well elaborated. And this is the idea. He says the mean of the histogram is very simple to compute. So if I have a histogram and I compute the mean, which is done using that formula, then it's very simple and fast to compute. If the mean was the good threshold, then I could compute it very fast and very simply. Why is the mean usually not the good threshold? Because, or let's put it the other way around. When would be the mean the good threshold? It would be the good one if the amount of object pixels and the amount of background pixels were exactly the same or approximately the same. If there is more background or more objects, then the mean goes to the background or goes closer to the objects. So so this is what he says. Can we in some way select from the original image more or less the same amount of pixels from the object and from the background and then compute the mean? So this is what he proposes. In this algorithm, I'm going a little further than you at this step should go. This is the application of operations like Laplacian operators is going to be discussed by Mingo further on. So I don't want to go in a lot of detail about this, but let me give you the general idea. The general idea is process the image applying this operator, which basically this convolution basically traverses the whole image applying this math, which basically is compute, let's say, highlight the pixels where there is a big difference between the gray level at one side and the gray level at another side, or up and down. Why does this happen in this case? If all the pixels have the same value, let's say in this cross, then the result of this would be zero. If there is a big difference between this one and this one, this one and this one, or this one and this one, then this will have in the absolute value a higher value. So if you apply a Laplacian like this to the original image that I was trying to process, this is what you get. You get pixels that are at the limit between the object and the background. And if you take a closer look, and I'm sorry for the bad quality of these images, but if you take a closer look, you could see that there's actually two rows of pixels, these ones and the other ones. So you get, in this Laplacian image, you get pixels on one side of the object and on the one side of the background. And in the limit, or in the in exactly the place where the intensity value changes in an important way. Let me show you the original image, which is very low quality, and you can see that it has important shadows. But you have these two objects and this smaller one. Okay, if you look at the Laplacian, what you see is pixels that are exactly at the limit of the object, from one side and the other. Okay, so this algorithm computes the Laplacian, and then it assumes that the Laplacian is signaling out points that are exactly on one side and the other of the object, more or less the same amount, because they're more or less the same on one side than on the other. Slightly less inside, but anyway, more or less the same amount. So what do we do next? We compute the histogram considering only pixels that have a high value for Laplacian. Not all of the image, but a new histogram which is signaled out by these. Okay? And this is the histogram that I get. You can see that it has more or less the same amount of object pixels than background pixels. And if you compute the mean, you get this part, and you can obtain a very good thresholding result using this solution. Is this more or less clear how this algorithm works? This is slightly more complex than you can grasp at this point, but it is especially useful, so I always try to explain it anyway, because it's a very important solution. Okay, all of the algorithms that I have explained here have limitations. There's not one killer algorithm to solve thresholding. So it depends on the application, it depends on the images, it depends on the illumination, it depends on whether you know something about the application or not. So it's just a matter, I'm afraid at this point, of trying different things and seeing what works better for you. Let me briefly then talk about the labs that we're going to start next week. We're going to work in the five first labs in an application, as I said, in the first week, to recognize planar objects. And we will use as example the toy train for the robot. This is how the system is going to work. It has one first learning phase and then one second exploitation phase. In the learning phase, we will show the system some, I think it is five image of each object that it should be able to recognize. And we're going to tell it what object it is. So this is a circle. This is the circle. This is the circle. Five images. This is the rectangle. This is the rectangle. This is the big circle. Okay? That will be in the learning phase. And the system is going to build a small database that contains information of how a circle looks like, how a rectangle looks like, how does the train look like, in with different descriptions that we will work on. And in an exploitation phase, then what we will do is show the system an image like this, and the system should be able to say, this is the rectangle right here, this is the circle right here, this is the train right here, and also very importantly, and this is the I don't know what it is. Why is it not going to know what it is? Because the objects are not isolated. So you have the two objects, but they are overlapped. Okay, and these types of systems are able to recognize objects that they have learned if they are fully visible and isolated from one another. Okay, so this is the case of plates in cars, of course, and many other useful applications. But I just wanted to point out from the start, what is the, going to be the limitation? What are the limitations of these types of systems? So the correct answer is going to be, as I said, rectangle, circle, train, and I don't know. That should be the result. And in the first lab that you should turn in by next week, you have to implement the Isodata algorithm. Okay? So all the images that you have to work on in this practice, in this labs, are already in the machine. In that's called Merlin. Does everybody here have an account in Merlin? You guys have? You guys? Not yet. How about you? No? You need an account in Merlin if you want to turn this on time next week. And I can't help you with that. You have to get that account for next week. Okay? So as I said, all the images are in the computer, and there's many libraries to read images, save images on this, and all of that stuff. I posted in my webpage the instructions for the first lab, okay, which detail how you have to program this Isodata algorithm. Let me tell you something. This first lab is extremely simple. Extremely simple. We start with simple things so you get the hang of it, and then we go to more complicated things. Okay, so this is very simple. Turn it in on time. In this example, it should in two iterations decide that the adequate threshold for the first image should be 164. Okay, as a hint of what the correct solution should be.